ci sarà. Most summers, the Mesabel over Yerushalayim in Eretz Yisrael, and together with many of your sons. It adds to our sense of avelos and our sense of loss. Just the gaguim of not being in Eretz Yisrael are particularly powerful, ironically, on Tisha B'av. Ironically, maybe very appropriately. And perhaps have a chance to share some of the Torah Eretz Yisrael. And I've heard from my Rebbein, from our Rebbein, that perhaps will add insight and add urgency to the tikkun that we need to make. And a thought that opens up the kina that's in front of us, by Konin Yirmiyahu Yoshio, and a thought that maybe frames a lot of the kinos. Rabbi Meir Twersky once shared several years ago as something that he had heard from his father, Rabbi Dr. Isidore Twersky, to think about the kinos as a sort of hesped. Talking before about Avelos Yishana, Avelos Chadasha, and the similarities and the differences. And the kinos are a bit like the eulogy that will be offered at the Levaya about the person who was lost. And if the one saying the hesped, if the maspid knew the mace, and if the maspid is a person of sensitivity, so then sometimes that maspid has the capacity to evoke bechi, even among people in the audience who never personally knew the mace, who never knew the nifta, as the Gemara says. Agra de hesped adaluye. But the main schar of the hesped is evoking the emotion of the people who listen. And certainly part of our avoda and part of the opportunity of the kinos is to allow us to listen carefully to the words that are being said by the Kalir and by others, the people who knew. The Rav was just talking about in the previous kinos, the Mishmaros, so many of these names, whether they're the official names, the unofficial names, groups that we don't even know personally. And we know of them because of the Kalir. And in the upcoming kina, in the 11th kina, Vayikonin Yirmiyahu Yoshio, so for the first time, the kinos turn to one particular person. This is a kina that's built on the language of the fourth parak of Eicha, as the kina itself says at the end, Vayikonin Alav Kol Eicha Yu'am Zahav. That when Yirmiyahu wrote Megillas Eicha, the fourth parak was a kina on King Yoshio. Who was this King Yoshio? He wasn't the first king of the Bayis Rishon, nor was he the last king of the Bayis Rishon. He was near the end, but he was the last in the sense that he was the last really sovereign king of the Malchus Beis David. He was the last truly free king. And after him, after Yoshio perished, as described in this kina, his descendants were the next few, the last few kings of Malchus Yehuda before destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but they were all puppets. No, they weren't really in charge. They were puppets of some superpower or another. They were working for Mitzrayim, they were working for Ashur, they were working for Babel, and they were replaced, they served and replaced at the pleasure of the emperor. And he's the last of the, in a sense, the death of Yoshiyahu is in many ways a major step of Chorban. And the story, the kina tells the story. Yoshiyahu was a wonder boy in many ways. Is Ben Shimon Hashanah, we hear at the beginning, Heichel Josh Meilav, he was not raised in a context of Yiras Hashem, to put it mildly. And at the tender age of 8, he begins to become a Baal Tshuva, and he powers an extraordinary Tshuva movement, one of the great Tshuva movements in Jewish history. He was second only to Moshe Rabbeinu in a certain sense, in terms of the Shmiras HaMitzvahs that he re-inspired, in terms of the connection to Torah they re-inspired, and yet, And yet he's overconfident, and yet he overcompensates. He's overconfident. Gemara explains that he, as the Kina tells us, he set great store in Lo Savar Cheref. One of the brachos, Mchumish, when Klaus will be zochet to brachos, not only will we not be attacked by an external power, but no other army will even pass through. You won't even be a pass through. And he felt, Laman Lo Savar Cheref Kol Shu Be'Ephraim, that we deserve that. That Egypt was headed northward to fight against Ashur at Carchemish. The easiest pass through is to take the to march along the coast, and that would require marching through Eretz Israel. And Yoshiyahu could have just let them go by. They weren't interested in fighting with Malchus Yehuda. They were headed for further north. But Yoshiyahu felt we deserve this bracha, and he heads them off at Megiddo. And Davak bo avon leitzani hador. He thought that Klal Yisrael, he thought that his tshuva process and his tshuva movement had been so incredibly successful that we deserved those brachas, but he didn't recognize, he was overconfident, didn't recognize that Leitzani Hadar, there were plenty of cynics. There were plenty of honest, tzmiyustik people who had indeed sincerely followed his instructions for tshuva. There was also a hardened group of cynics who thought they knew better and thought that they could stick to their Avodah Zarah. And they had ways of concealing the Avodah Zarah, the Medrash describes. Even when Yoshio's people would come around to look, there was no signs of Avodah Zarah. It was very cleverly concealed. And so Yoshio suffers from an overconfidence. And he also suffers from an overcompensation. L'Hashem Alachoz L'Hashem Achray, the Navi had told him this is not the time to do this, but Gezeira nigzer l'sachseich Mitzrayim v'Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was planning to militarily neutralize Mitzrayim anyways. Not only did he think he had power that in fact he didn't, he thought he had a problem that he really didn't. So I'd like you to think about Balak. And Balak is so frightened that that Klal Yisrael have successfully routed Sichon and Og, and they're going to come eat us for lunch next. And he begins to call in Bilam, and he seeks out solutions that don't help to a problem that doesn't actually even exist. Because unbeknownst to him, Klal Yisrael had been told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't touch Moab. There was no problem that needed solving. He could have just stepped back. Like the daughters of Lot, who think that the human race is in danger of extinction and we have to do something to save it, and they extreme measures that aren't even necessary. And both of these problems, the overconfidence of the second stanza, and the unnecessary overcompensation, gezeira nigzera l'sachseich mitzrayim, both of them in a sense, you know, speak to the need for anava, for humility in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects efforts of us, but results are on him. Results are on him. The anava of knowing I may have succeeded and I may not have succeeded. And the anava of knowing, of seeing what actually is, what needs solving, and what's HaKadosh Baruch Hu going to take care of. And ultimately, at the end, he does engage in a tziduk hadin. Tzadiku Hashem ki marisi pihu. He recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's call in retrospect. I had done wrong. But at that point, the die is already cast. The die is already cast. And you read in the second to last stanza, a very, very powerful type of image. It sounds like there was a hanging hakel. Hakel is the once in 7 years that Klal Yisrael gather together to learn Torah publicly from the Melech. And it sounds like there was a hakel that almost happened, that with the death of Yoshio didn't happen. And that captures maybe very, very vividly. It was more than just that mitzvah, that moment of hakel. But there was potential for Klal Yisrael coming together that had been shattered by Yoshio's tragic decisions. And the Churban process progressed from there. Vayikonen Yirmiyahu al Yoshio. Echa Eli Kanunu Meila.